From NPR News, this is special coverage of the 2016 election. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Rachel Martin. The wait is almost over. The results are coming in.
Polls closed an hour ago in nine states, including North Carolina, where the presidential race between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton has been especially tight.
The Associated Press has called Vermont for Hillary Clinton. Donald Trump has won Indiana, Kentucky, and West Virginia.
No calls yet for Virginia or for Ohio and Georgia.
More polls close this hour, and we're watching returns from two toss-up states, Florida and New Hampshire. Florida is a must-win for Donald Trump with its 29 electoral votes.
And, of course, it's not all about the presidential race. We're closely following several contests that could determine which party will control the Senate.
And then there's what happens to the GOP majority in the House. Stay with us.
First up this hour with details of what we know so far is NPR's Sue Davis. Hiya, Sue.
Hey, Robert.
So, can we hear Sue better now? What do you tell us what we know?
What we know at the top of the hour is there are no surprises yet. Donald Trump has an early lead in electoral votes with 24 in states he was expected to win, Indiana, Kentucky, and West Virginia. Clinton with three electoral votes in Vermont, the home state of her former Democratic primary rival, Bernie Sanders. And in the battle for the Senate, an early bright spot for Republicans where incumbent Senator Rob Portman of Ohio was quickly declared the winner in that race against former Democratic Governor Ted Strickland. He was expected to win this race, but he has run one of the better campaigns of the cycle and is something that Republicans have pointed to as how future races will be run.
So far, so far as we know, we don't know of any incumbents who've lost a Senate seat.
No, so far all the incumbents have won. We have other incumbents that have won. Senator Rand Paul, another former Republican presidential primary rival of Donald Trump. Tim Scott, a senator from South Carolina. And Patrick Leahy, another Democratic senator from Vermont. All incumbents, all quickly won re-election. No surprises there.
It's turned to the most important things we don't know yet, especially about the states that have, where the polls have closed. We don't know what's happening in Ohio. Florida. I mean, the things are close. Nobody's called those races.
Right. At the 8 o'clock hour, half of the states, 25 states have closed their polls. One exception, North Carolina has extended some voting due to some voting issues there. At stake and closed in these 25 states is 270 electoral votes, but we still have a very long waiting game to go.
Yes.
We're going to move now to NPR's Ron Elving, who's in the studio with us as well. And Ron, it's worth noting this is a historic election. This is the first time a woman has been a major party nominee. On the other side, Donald Trump is an exceptional candidate no matter how you dice it. What are you going to be looking at as the night starts to unfold?
We're waiting for more waves of exit polls so we can see if the first wave of exit polls that has been made public, not necessarily showing which candidate would win, but showing some of the characteristics of the voters, whether or not that first wave will be confirmed by a second and third wave of exit polls. But what it has been showing us is a great deal of disparity between the judgment of white voters and the judgment of people of color. For example, in the state of Georgia, we are being told that more than 80%, something like 85% of the African Americans and the Hispanic Americans and the Asian Americans in Georgia are voting for Hillary Clinton, and they make up about almost 40% of the electorate in Georgia, whereas the rest of the electorate is still non-Hispanic white, and they're going 70-some percent for Donald Trump. So that's a pretty good example of why we're seeing such a split in a racial sense. We're also seeing an equally dramatic sense of split between men and women, a very dramatic split between the young and the old, with the younger voters favoring Hillary Clinton. And we're seeing a dramatic shift among white voters between those who have a college degree and those who do not. Now, none of this is a huge surprise. We've been seeing it in the polls all fall, but it's dramatic in states such as Georgia, South Carolina, North Carolina. We expect will look much like it. We haven't seen much from North Carolina yet. They're extending the voting time there, as you said. And we expect to see that in Ohio and some of the northern states as well.
Let's go to NPR's Tamara Keith, who I believe is with the Hillary Clinton campaign at the Javits Center in Manhattan. Tam, just describe the scene there right now.
This is a giant convention center that happens to have a very, very large glass ceiling.
And a real glass ceiling? You're not speaking metaphorically.
A literal glass ceiling, okay. Which I hope does not literally crack tonight. there are also confetti cannons in case it, you know, metaphorically cracks. And, you know, people are still arriving. The staff that I've talked to that have been milling around, you know, they are cautiously confident Clinton campaign over prepares for everything, worries about every detail down to the last voter. And so they're still working on executing that plan.
Let's turn to NPR's Don Gagne, who is with some Trump supporters tonight. He's in Cambria County in western Pennsylvania. Ron Elving was just talking about states like Ohio, where a big question is, will white working class voters provide enough votes for Donald Trump, people perhaps who would have voted for Democrats in the past, to cancel out the votes of many people who used to vote Republican, will be voting for Hillary Clinton today. What does it look like to you in that part of the state?
Well, I've been bouncing from polling place to polling place all day, and they have been busy. They have been busy. The first one I went to, there were close to 100 people in line before the doors even opened at 7 o'clock, and there was frost on the ground. So folks feel like they have been turning out. And the other thing I'm hearing, now this is very, very much Donald Trump country here, but they're still pretty optimistic. The polls in Pennsylvania had at least been tightening, though Donald Trump never took a lead here all year. But they think that, the Republicans in these rural areas combined with those working-class white former Democrats who once worked in steel and maybe they work in coal now can pull off a surprise.
It was in Pennsylvania that Donald Trump famously said, if I lose here, it'll be because the election was rigged. And people in the central part of the state and the western part of the state will talk about Philadelphia, that they'll, will be our legitimate votes can be overwhelmed with fake votes from the big city in the east. Mm-hmm. Do you hear that from people? Do they seem to believe that this vote could be stolen?
You hear them questioning about whether or not it is all legitimate, but you have to ask them about that. I mean, that hasn't been one of the first things they've thrown at me when I start talking to them. And again, there are people who still have hope that Donald Trump is going to pull off an upset here in Pennsylvania. Now, a lot of them say that we'll have to see what happens, and they do kind of nod to Philadelphia, and they say you know what happens there. But for now, there is still kind of a feeling that he could pull it off here.
Sue Davis, you're comments on that?
Well, we have some updated results. Some races are being called in this 8 o'clock hour. Hillary Clinton has taken a narrow lead in the electoral votes with 44 to Donald Trump's 31. She has won Delaware, Maryland, Massachusetts, New Jersey, and right here in Washington, D.C. Donald Trump picked up Oklahoma. Again, no surprises in these early votes, reliably conservative and reliably Democratic states. We can also call that Marco Rubio has won re-election to a second term in the state of Florida. He was competing against Democratic Congressman Patrick Murphy. He was expected to win this race, so that is not a surprise result, but it is another bright spot early in the evening for Senate Republicans.
So let's go now to Florida, where we've got NPR's Greg Allen on the line, who is with the campaign of Marco Rubio. Greg, I imagine this is an ebullient moment for this campaign. This was tight for him.
Well, Rachel, I don't think the word has filtered down here yet. People are not reacting. It has not been called by some of the folks on TV. And so we've not gotten reaction here in the crowd. Of course, Senator Rubio is not here. But as you've been saying, this was a race that he was expected to win, but it turned out to be much more of a contest than they had hoped for. And they battled down to the end. But Patrick Murphy, a first-term congressman, just was not able to pull it off.
This has been quite a story for Marco Rubio this year. A year ago, he looked like one of the young hopefuls of the Republican Party to get the presidential nomination. He lost after being famously embarrassed in a debate by Governor Chris Christie of New Jersey. And then he retired. He had said he wouldn't run for the Senate. So this was a kind of an improvised race that he made for the Senate.
Well, I'm not sure how improvised it ended up being in the end, but it is true that he kept saying that he was not going to run. He said that repeatedly over and over again.
Sounds like word has maybe gotten out.
Yes. We're starting to get the word of what's going on here. But at the very last minute, Marco Rubio decided to get into the race. He was convinced it would run by others in the party, he said. And it was an uphill battle, really, for in many ways. He had to answer questions about why he was getting back in. But he did so, and it's paid off for him tonight.
Greg, how did he run with Donald Trump at the top of the ticket? I mean, what was that dance like for him?
He's been on a tightrope, saying that he's not an ideal candidate. He stood by the things he said about Donald Trump, but he was pressed on whether he wouldn't say whether he would trust him with the nuclear codes. Ultimately, that was one of the questions he wouldn't answer. But he said that he felt it was a better choice than Hillary Clinton, and that he was going to vote for him.
Ron, I want to turn to you, if I could. Ron Elving here in the studio with me. So we've just heard that Marco Rubio has won his bid for the Senate in Florida. What does that mean, if anything, about Donald Trump's chances in Florida, which is a must-win for him?
Donald Trump really needs to win Florida. At the moment, with over 80% of the vote in, he is trailing, but only trailing slightly. That race has bounced around a little bit. It's gotten a little wider lead for Hillary Clinton, then a little narrower. We still have a lot of the vote to count. And as we have already said, we take Florida very slowly and very seriously. So that last 18% of the vote in Florida could move the lead back and forth several times. But at this hour, the Trump campaign would very much like to be saying they're confident of winning Florida. We're not hearing that from them at this point. The Clinton people seem to be smiling. And Florida is a big, big question mark. 29 electoral votes, the biggest of the battlegrounds, the state that it is extremely difficult to imagine Trump making it to the White House without. So Marco Rubio has clearly run many points. We don't know exactly how many yet, but high single digits at least, ahead of his old nemesis, Donald Trump, in his own home state.
Do we know anything about Latino turnout in Florida through the exit polling at this point?
Yes, we know from the early voting that as many Hispanic voters voted early this time as voted in the entire election in 2012. That's a pretty remarkable statement, and it indicates a strong growth in the interest of Hispanic Americans in the presidential election. Of course, the obvious explanation for that would be their aversion to Donald Trump, because they do seem to have been voting for Hillary Clinton, and they do seem to have turned out in record-breaking numbers.
We should say that Senator Wicker of Mississippi, who was on earlier, he had a number. He said that in South Florida, Marco Rubio was running 10 points ahead of Donald Trump. And that would be that would give him quite an advantage. And it would suggest that he is not his win in Florida does not necessarily augur well for Donald Trump's.
Although we do still need to hear from the panhandle. We still need to hear from some of the more northern parts of
Florida. And that's a very Republican part of the state.
Right. They have the old saw about northern Florida being more southern and southern Florida being more like the north.
Sue Davis?
We have another state that's been called for Donald Trump, the state of South Carolina, which leads the electoral vote tally now to Donald Trump has 40 electoral votes. Hillary Clinton has 44.
And once again, no surprise. I mean, we would be shocked if South Carolina were going for Hillary Clinton. So far, all of the states that have been called the way we assumed they would be called. No incumbent senator has lost a race so far. Democrats who had hoped at one time a year ago that they might be able to defeat an Ohio Republican incumbent in the Senate, Rob Portman, those hopes were dashed. He ran handily ahead and has been called the winner. They were hoping to win an open seat in Indiana where Senator Dan Coats is retiring. It appears that the Republican candidate there is running quite well, Todd Young.
That's correct. And also remember with Marco Rubio, he had announced he was going to retire. He did not want to run for a second term. And it was a huge effort by Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell to get Marco Rubio to run again after former Democratic Senator Evan Bayh said he was going to get into this race. That was seen as sort of evening the score in the balance for control of the Senate. Marco Rubio obviously has been declared the winner there. Evan Bayh, the former Democratic Senator, is trailing Congressman Todd Young, but it's too soon to call.
It's NPR's Sue Davis, along with our political editor, Ron Elving. And as you've heard, the evening is still young. We have yet to learn how things have turned out in Florida or Ohio or North Carolina today. So there's much still to be learned. Joining us now is a member of the, sometimes a member of the House Republican leadership, Tom Cole of Oklahoma. Congressman Cole, are you with us?
I am indeed.
So far, from what you've seen, you're a political consultant by trade. How would you describe the evening as it's developing?
You know, a very interesting evening. It could be an historic evening. Obviously, at this point, the presidential is still open, but the map works in Hillary Clinton's favor, and there's certainly an indication that she may be successful, but there's also an indication, I think it's pretty certain, the Republicans will hold the House, and now it's looking increasingly like they hold the Senate. And if that were to happen, she would actually be the first Democratic president who ever assumed office without control of either House in Congress.
So, you are speaking of the possibility of her being president as though it's something not out of the question at this point.
Certainly not. Look, this is a very competitive race. Both of these candidates still have a chance to win. And as one of your earlier commentators pointed out, a place like Florida is a must-win for us. We have to win it. But there's still 18% of the vote out. It's still close. We can still win it. But it is interesting to me. I think we're running better than a lot of people thought we would at the senatorial level, where we have a very difficult map, 24 Republican seats up versus only 10. And again, in the House, the early returns would suggest while we may lose some ground, we'll certainly hold a majority.
Do you have any reason to think that you're running well in Pennsylvania, where Senator Toomey is seeking re-election, or in New Hampshire, where Senator Ayotte is seeking re-election?
I do. Some of the early numbers, again, I think both Toomey and Ayotte will run ahead of Trump, and that's not a big surprise. I mean, they're both incumbents. They obviously know their states extremely well. They've won there before, but again, either of those could go away. But the early, you like being able to put away Florida early with Rubio. You like being able to surprise the Democrats, at least from several months ago, in Indiana. You like being able to say Portman's overperformed. So, you know, again, early in the evening, but legislatively, it looks like we'll do well, and we're still very much in the hunt presidentially.
Let's say that Republicans hold the House, the Senate, we don't know, and let's say Hillary Clinton is elected. What would you expect the mood to be in Washington? Is it being in Congress is an election by another means? Does the argument go on, or is there a time for some kind of reconciliation?
Well, I think certainly there can. At the end of the day, the government has to work. We need to get things done. But it would mean, I think, that Senator Clinton would, or Secretary Clinton, would have to move toward the Republicans. She's run pretty far to the left. I mean, the pursuit of the Bernie Sanders vote has taken her way, way from the center. And most of the things she's run on are not going to get through a Republican House, let alone a Republican House and Senate, if we're successful in the upper chamber. So she would have to recalibrate, I think, some of the things she wanted to do. But look, she's a professional. Yeah. Other people are professional. They'll try and work with her.
Republican Congressman Tom Cole of Oklahoma. Thanks for talking with us.
Thank you.
Election night 2016 here on Minnesota Public Radio News. I'm Tom Cran in the NPR newsroom. We've got our eyes on Florida, where things are very tight in the presidential race, but we have races here in Minnesota that we're monitoring as well tonight. including three tight congressional races in the 2nd, in the 3rd, and in the 8th districts. We'll bring you the latest on those. And our political analysts here for a brief check-in. Mr. Todd Rapp, the Democrat, good to have you here.
Hey, Tom.
And what are you watching tonight especially?
Those three congressional races are not just important for Minnesota, but nationally. If Democrats were to sweep those, it might indicate that Nancy Pelosi is going to have a great night.
All right. And Maureen Shaver, the Republican, what are you watching tonight?
Todd and I will be keeping close track on the Minnesota legislature. Both the Senate and the House are up for re-election. There will be some bellwether districts that we'll be keeping track of in the metropolitan area that will probably give us an indication of where things are headed.
All right. And we'll keep our eyes on all of that with another 41 minutes until polls close here in Minnesota. Reminder that if you are online or in line by 8 o'clock, you will be able to vote. You will not be turned away. So if you haven't yet done it, you've got until 8 tonight. And when those returns in Minnesota start coming in, we'll bring you the latest throughout the evening. Our live coverage on the air here on Minnesota Public Radio News and online, too. Lots of facts and figures, charts and numbers at nprnews.org, 720.
From NPR News, this is live special election coverage. I'm Rachel Martin.
And I'm Robert Siegel. Here's what we know so far in the race for the White House. Polls have closed in about 24 states and the District of Columbia. Donald Trump has won South Carolina, Oklahoma, Indiana, Kentucky, and West Virginia.
We can also add Tennessee. Hillary Clinton has won Massachusetts, New Jersey, Maryland, Delaware, and Vermont. It's far too early for this to be really significant, but for those keeping track, Clinton has 44 electoral votes. Donald Trump has 40. We're waiting to hear about South Carolina, Virginia, Georgia, Ohio, and North Carolina. Polls have been extended, although I believe South Carolina was called for Donald Trump.
Yeah, for Donald Trump. In the race for Congress, Republican Senator Marco Rubio has won re-election in Florida. That's an important race for Republicans looking to keep Senate control. In Ohio, incumbent Senator Rob Portman, a Republican, has also won, as well as Tim Scott in South Carolina. So far, none of the most competitive races for the Senate has been called.
So we're going to go to the people who know the things, the first. NPR's Susan Davis is with us in the studio. Susan, just bring us up to speed. What do we know right now?
And just so we're clear, I believe we want to make sure we have the electoral vote count right. Right now, Donald Trump has a narrow lead with 51 electoral votes. Hillary Clinton is at 44. Of course, as we've discussed, all of the states that have been called are falling exactly as we would expect. And that in the battle for control of the Senate, it's still too soon to say. There was no surprises with the re-elections of Rob Portman and Marco Rubio. Both of those incumbent senators were favored to win. Soon we're going to start getting some results in New Hampshire, where incumbent Senator Kelly Ayotte is one of the Republicans up for re-election, and in Pennsylvania, where incumbent Senator Pat Toomey is also one of the Republicans that Democrats are trying to defeat in their bid to pick up the Senate. Democrats need to win at least 4 seats tonight if they have a chance to take the Senate, and that would require Hillary Clinton to win, because in a 50-50 Senate, the tie goes to the vice president. And they need to win 5 seats outright if Donald Trump wins tonight.
As we've heard from two members, two Republican members of Congress, Roger Wicker, Senator from Mississippi, and Tom Cole, a House member from Oklahoma, they have both spoken of successful Republican candidates running ahead of Trump. That the test very often for these senators running in tough races is, can they escape whatever drag Donald Trump's candidacy might have on them in states that are going to be closely contested in the presidential race?
On that, can we drill down a little bit on New Hampshire, Ron? Because this is a significant race. This is where Kelly Ayotte has had a hard time doing exactly that, trying to navigate this situation with Donald Trump at the top of the ticket.
Kelly Ayotte had an unfortunate moment in a debate with her Democratic challenger, the incumbent governor there, Maggie Hassan, when she was asked how do you feel about Donald Trump? Do you see him as a role model? And she said, absolutely. And then she walked that back a couple of days later, and she has tried to put distance between herself and Donald Trump, but the many controversies about Donald Trump, particularly with respect to the women accusing him of sexual assault, and particularly after the Access Hollywood tape, it was very difficult for her to entirely shed the shadow of Donald Trump. And it's so important to her in this race against her fellow woman, if you will, who was challenging her as a very strong supporter of Hillary Clinton, as Maggie Hassan has been. So here you have one party united behind their presidential candidate and their governor, the other party trying to hold out against that. And that's been a tough one for Kelly Ayotte, but she's held her own.
We should note on an evening when the fact of a woman running for president is historic news, New Hampshire is a state where all the office holders practically are women, the governor, the two senators, the members of Congress. It's unique in that respect.
Yes, and you wouldn't necessarily expect that from the old rock-ribbed sort of New England state of New Hampshire, the Granite State, after all, which had for many years a very conservative reputation in our politics. But times are changing in the Northwoods. And, for example, the Manchester Union Leader, which was a stalwart Republican paper forever, did not endorse Donald Trump.
Oh. It was scathing in its criticism
and said they would rather have you vote for the Libertarian candidate, Gary Johnson.
We're going to bring in another voice to the conversation right now. Roger Stone is a longtime Republican operative and informal advisor to Donald Trump. He's on the line now. Mr. Stone, thanks for being with us. Roger, do we have Roger Stone on the line?
Yes, I'm
here. Roger, are you there? How are you feeling right now?
Well, it's still a bit early. Election nights are always nerve-wracking. I'm still waiting for some of these large states to come in. I've always recognized that the path to 270 for Donald Trump was more tortured and more difficult than the Democratic nominee. On the other hand, it's not over until it's over.
What states are you particularly worried about?
Well, I'm very interested in Pennsylvania. There is some data which indicates that Trump has run stronger in the western part of the state than your average Republican. There are already some numbers that indicate that he is outpolling both Mitt Romney and John McCain by a couple points among African Americans. Pennsylvania is kind of the fool's gold of American Republican politics, meaning George W. Bush, John McCain, Mitt Romney all mounted major multi-million-dollar efforts to win the state, and they all fell short. So that it is competitive in these final polls is kind of intriguing.
There's been some concern over Donald Trump's rhetoric in the past week or so, talking about the possibility that the election is rigged, that there could be widespread voter fraud, that essentially if he loses, it's not his fault, it's because it was stolen from him. Do you see a utility in that rhetoric? Do you think that has hurt him at all?
Anybody who thinks that voter fraud does not exist is being naive. Anybody who thinks that voter machine manipulation does not happen is being equally naive.
Although there's no evidence to support that at this point.
On the contrary, read the book by Professor Robert Fitrakis at Columbus State. There's a great deal of evidence to it. But without getting into it, let me say that Trump would have to have, you know, admissible evidence of it. He can't just make a claim that because I lost, the system is rigged. Something we'll have to look at when the election is over.
You know him. You've known him a long time. I interviewed you a few months ago, and we talked about the importance of winning to him and to his identity. Can you see him, if the vote tonight does not go his way, can you see him giving a concession speech?
Well, I've never thought he was someone who had to be president to be somebody. He was already a national figure of great accomplishment, and he's never been driven by the need for public office. So if the election is honestly conducted and he loses, I think he will concede like a gentleman. On the other hand, we have to know what the situation is. I don't blame him for not blindly endorsing the outcome of an election until we determine whether it's been honestly and fairly conducted.
Roger Stone, a informal advisor to Donald Trump. Roger, thank you so much for taking the time.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
In a moment, we're going to turn to North Carolina, one of the big contested swing states that we're still waiting on. But first, I think we do have some news about calls of state. Sue Davis, anything happened?
The latest calls, we still have Clinton holding at 44 electoral votes and Donald Trump at 51. When we were talking about Florida, just an update, it's obviously too soon to call, but Florida is remarkably close at the top of the ticket between Trump and Hillary Clinton. With over 8 million votes counted and cast and 61% reporting, there's just 20,000 votes separating the two candidates, which tells us it could be a very, very long night, if not early morning, okay, to know what's happening in Florida.
On that note, let's turn to North Carolina and Jeff Tiberi of member station WUNC. Jeff, how do things look there in the presidential race? It also seems to be very close.
It seems to be very close. With more than 3 million votes currently in, Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump are separated by less than 850 votes. So right now, Hillary Clinton has a lead of 853 votes with more than 3 million already counted. North Carolina is certainly a key swing state, a key battleground state this year. In addition to this presidential race, there's also a Senate race that is tight at this point. Richard Burr is a Republican incumbent. He's been in Congress for two decades. He's facing a challenge from Deborah Ross. She's a former state lawmaker. She trails, again, only about 18% of the vote or so, or the 18% of the precincts reporting. Ross and Burr, over the last hour, have gone back and forth with who has had the lead. This is also expected to be a tight race, and one of these races that Democrats have keyed on as they try to take back either 4 seats with a Clinton victory or 5 seats with a Trump victory to take control back of the U.S. Senate. Also of interest here in North Carolina in this deeply violet or purple state is the gubernatorial race. Mm-hmm. And Governor Pat McCrory has taken a lot of criticism for the passage of House Bill 2, which has been this piece of legislation that was seen discriminatory against the LGBT community. And right now he's trailing by about 100,000 votes to Roy Cooper. Cooper is a Democrat and has been the state's attorney general for the past 16 years. So the short of it, Robert, is that things are tight right now. Yeah. And that at the moment, Cooper leads in the governor's race, and Clinton has a very narrow advantage in the presidential race.
But in that presidential race, Jeff, before you go, when you speak of 3 million votes having been cast, in North Carolina, is that, in the presidential race, how much of the state is that so far that's been counted?
It's a good question. I cannot tell you precisely. So there are 2,700 precincts in the state. So far, 464 of them have reported. This is according to the North Carolina State Board of Elections. That's only about 17% of all the precincts across the state. So at this point, Hillary Clinton has a narrow lead that does not include all of the early voting numbers, and it does not include all of the urban numbers. So it's tough to decipher exactly what is in at this point. We do know, one footnote, that Durham, North Carolina, a very left-leaning county with about 60,000-70,000 residents. There were some minor issues at the polls today. So some of the polls in Durham, some of the precincts just closed at 8:30, two of them to be precise, but some of the precincts tonight were delayed. So that will delay the tally in some of these urban areas.
And that would be a Democratic-leaning area. It's in the Research Triangle area, and including where Duke University is. Jeff Tiberi at WNC in North Carolina, thanks for talking with us.
My pleasure.
Ron, North Carolina, obviously very important to Hillary Clinton. There were some polls that were saying that the young African-American vote was not turning out for her in the way that the Clinton campaign had hoped. Can you say more about the significance of that?
The significance would be that Hillary Clinton has always counted on older African-American voters, people who were graduates, if you will, of the civil rights era, people who remembered the struggles of earlier decades, but that she had not made much of a connection with the millennial generation of African-Americans in many places, not just North Carolina. Mm. And also there was some indication that the early voting in some precincts that are heavily African-American in that state had not been up to expectations or had not matched what happened in 2012. It turns out, of course, that many of those precincts had many of their voting places for early voting closed by policy decisions made by the Republican-dominated state government, legislature, and governor's office, after the Voting Rights Act had that particular provision that would have prevented such things removed by the Supreme Court. So that was also a factor, and perhaps a rather large thumb on the scale, in determining whether or not the early voting by African Americans would match what it was in 2012. Now, we haven't seen a breakdown in terms of race yet with respect to how people are voting in North Carolina in this hour, but Hillary Clinton has been maintaining a lead. She's been a little over 50% in North Carolina as the vote there moves past 50%. So at this point, she is certainly competitive in North Carolina. We'll have to go back in and look and see how well she did among black voters.
Sue Davis, you got an update?
Yeah. A quick update. Donald Trump has won Alabama, and it's 9 electoral votes. So he has taken a narrow lead with 60 electoral votes to 44 for Hillary Clinton. And in the Senate races in Indiana, the race has been called for Republican Congressman Todd Young. He has defeated former Senator Evan Bayh in a disappointing loss for Senate Democrats who thought that Evan Bayh was going to be able to win this seat
Evan
for the Democratic Bayh, Party.
Not just a former senator from Indiana, but the son of a former senator from Indiana, Birch Bayh, and the epitome of the insider, of the Washington insider, experienced politician. And this was not the year to run as an insider.
It was not the year to come from, to be seen as an insider and to be seen as the establishment.
By the way, the Associated Press has also said that from what they've seen, the Republicans retained control of the U.S. House of Representatives, which is not a small thing to be called. We didn't expect the Democrats to regain control, but they've put their authority behind that forecast.
You can follow us everywhere, literally everywhere. Go to NPR.org and you will find our blog. We are also on Facebook and Twitter. And we're on the radio. Stay with us. This is special coverage from NPR News.
And this is special coverage of Election Night 2016 from Minnesota Public Radio News. And we are literally everywhere. If you're standing in a long line waiting to vote, are you seeing any other voting troubles? You can still tell us about it. Use the hashtag TellMPR on Twitter and Facebook. And make MPRNews.org your second screen all evening long. A live blog, real-time results from the presidential race and all of Minnesota's congressional contests. I'm Tom Cran in the Minnesota Public Radio Newsroom with our political editor, Mike Mulcahy. And they're still voting out there, Mike.
Absolutely. Still voting in Minnesota, Tom, for another 25 minutes. And, of course, if you're in line at 8 o'clock, you still can vote. So hang on if you're still in line. We haven't heard of many voting problems around the state today. Everything seems to have gone fairly smoothly up until now.
We're going to check in with our reporters now in the next few minutes around the state. And first, we check in at DFL headquarters in Minneapolis. Brian Baxt is there. And, Brian, tell us what's going on there now. What's the mood?
Well, the ballroom is just starting to fill in. It's still a pretty light crowd. They're sitting here watching TVs and cheering whenever a state goes for Hillary Clinton or a key Senate race falls in their favor. Here's a number I want you to keep in mind, though. Once Minnesota's polls close, the Democrats here are watching for 77%. That's the turnout they think that they'll need to have a good night down the ballot, because they're watching the state House races, the state Senate races, and a couple key congressional races.
All right, Brian Baxt, will continue to watch those with you in Minneapolis with the DFLers. Tim Pugmire is with the Republicans at the Radisson Blue. That's there at the Mall of America in Bloomington. And, Tim, what do you have your eye on tonight and what's going on there?
Well, folks are just starting to filter into the ballroom here at the hotel, but Republicans are going to be looking at several things tonight. First of all, how does Donald Trump perform in the state? What impact will that have on down-ballot races? Does the GOP lose congressional seats or gain them in Minnesota? Does the GOP retain control of the Minnesota House, and does the GOP win control of the state Senate or narrow the DFL majority? State Republican Chairman Keith Downey is about to meet with reporters outside the ballroom. We're going to hear from him about his expectations for the evening.
All right, Tim Pugmire with the Republicans there in Bloomington. Thanks. We'll check in with you again. We're going to go up north now because we've got our eyes on the 8th District congressional race, where DFLer Rick Nolan is defending his seat against Republican Stuart Mills. And Mark Zdeklik is in Baxter with the Nolan campaign tonight. Hi, Mark.
Hello, Tom. Congressman Nolan is here at the hotel in Baxter. He's been doing interviews with local media talking about how he sees things kind of shaping up. He started in Duluth. That's a good place to campaign. That's where most of the 8th District voters are. This is a $20 million congressional race, Minnesota's 8th district race. It's been a hard-fought rematch between Democrat Rick Nolan and Republican Stuart Mills, and everybody's waiting now for the vote to start coming in about a half an hour or so.
Right, exactly. All right, Mark Sedeklik in Baxter. We'll check in with you again throughout the evening. Dan Crocker is in Nisswa, where with Stuart Mills. Exactly, Rick Nolan's one-time and current challenger, Stuart Mills, is. Hi, Dan.
Hey, Tom. Yeah, that's right. There's a rematch this year, and I'm here at Galdam Brewing in Nisswa, largely with just media at this point. There's TV crews here from all the Twin City stations, from Duluth as well, and that's really indicative of the amount of attention this race has gotten. It's really one of the closest and most expensive House races in the country. Stuart Mills has not appeared yet. We're expecting him a little after 8 p.m. when he's expected to address his supporters after the polls close tonight in Minnesota.
All right.
And thanks, Dan Crocker. And we'll keep an eye on those races once the polls close. We also have our analysts here, Democrat Todd Rapp, Republican Maureen Shaver. Todd, let me just start with you. 77%, Brian Bax told us, Democrats want to see in terms of turnout tonight, and they think that will be good for them. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. Every additional 1,000 people who turn out tends to be more Democratic. That would be 3.06 million votes. That'd be the highest vote total we've ever received. I don't think anybody was predicting that until we saw how many people voted by absentee ballot, more than 650,000. Now I think there is a real chance that we're going to pass 3 million and maybe get as high as the Democrats are hoping for to have a good night.
Maureen, quick question. Do Republicans worry if the turnout gets that high?
We always worry if it's quite large, but if it's all in Minneapolis and St. Paul, we'll be fine.
All right. Maureen Shaver, Todd Rapp, our analysts here with us tonight. Tom Cran, as we continue with our coverage.
All right. Mike Mulcahy, our political editor. I'm Tom Cran in the Minnesota Public Radio Newsroom, bringing you live coverage, teaming with NPR all night long. Stay with us. Polls open for another 20 minutes in Minnesota.
From NPR News, this is special coverage of the 2016 election. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Rachel Martin. Here's what we know so far in the race for the White House. The races in key states like Florida, Ohio, Virginia, Pennsylvania, New Hampshire, and North Carolina are still too close to call.
So far, we can project Donald Trump to have won 60 electoral votes. The Associated Press is calling states with 44 electoral votes for Hillary Clinton.
Of course, there are many, many more votes to count from key states, and we will bring you those results as we get them tonight. We are joined, however, on the line now by Lorella Praley. She is at the Javits Center. This is where Hillary Clinton hopes she's going to be holding a victory party. Thanks so much for being with us.
Hi, it's an honor to be here. Very excited to join you today.
What's the spirit there right now? How are you feeling in particular?
I'm feeling good. I think it's going to be a close race. And, you know, we've been working very hard for many, many months for this moment. And I'm the National Latino Vote Director for the campaign. And I'm just really excited with what we've seen so far with Hispanic voters, particularly as we wrapped up early vote period. And today, I think it's an important election for us. And I'm so proud that our community is going out there and making sure that our voices are heard.
Oh, we just heard from Ted Devine, who was instrumental in the Bernie Sanders campaign. And, you know, we heard him talking about concerns that some on the left have that Hillary Clinton, in order to govern, is saying that she's going to have to tack right, that she's going to have to become a centrist or govern like a centrist in order to move the levers of power. Is that something that you think is a good thing?
I think we have to get through today first and make sure that she's in the Oval Office. And, you know, I think a lot of people expected Hillary Clinton to change her positions or had assumptions that she would do that as we headed into the general election. And I think you didn't see that. You saw her stand by what she had proposed in the primary and actually go to the left on some of these issues as well. And so, you know, I think that is how she governs. I think she brings people together. She's done it in the past. But, you know, governing is also different, and we've got to bring different people together, and we have to build a coalition to move forward the policies that she's proposed. And I think that there will be a time and place to have that discussion. But I'm very optimistic that if she's in office, we're going to see a comprehensive immigration reform bill early. We're going to see an infrastructure and jobs bill early. But that is why we need the turnout today.
A personal question to you. You said during the Democratic National Convention that this would actually be your first election because you just became a U.S. citizen last year, I understand.
That's right. Today's the first time I got to vote in a presidential election. I voted in the primary, the New York primary for Secretary Clinton, but I became a citizen last December. And I spent 14 years of my life without documentation in this country. I was undocumented. And my sister has deferred action for childhood arrivals that protects her from deportation. And Donald Trump has promised to end in his first day in office. And so to us, this is a very personal election. I'm very excited, was very enthusiastic and very emotional this morning when I went to vote and just felt like I was carrying in my heart the 11 million people who can't make their voices heard in this election directly, but who have certainly played an important role in our campaign and in our nation getting us to this moment.
Lorella Praley has been helping lead Hispanic outreach for the Hillary Clinton campaign. Thank you so much for your time tonight.
Thank you.
A couple of points before we turn to our next guest, both about the House of Representatives. Earlier, I said the Associated Press had reported the Republicans had retained the House. They actually reported that a couple of networks had called that the Republicans would retain the House. So just to get that straight, the AP itself has not said as much. In Florida, though, Sue Davis, I just want to bring one House race to your attention. Charlie Crist,
yes,
has been elected to the House of Representatives as a Democrat.
The former Republican governor of Florida ran for the House this year as a Democrat. He defeated Republican incumbent David Jolly, and he is a former political rival of one Marco Rubio. So Charlie Crist and Marco Rubio will be serving together in the same delegation in the next Congress, which I say proves that 2016 certainly has a sense of humor.
Yes, Crist, as governor, sought the nomination for the U.S. Senate. He was the establishment favorite. Marco Rubio was a Tea Party favorite. Charlie Crist was held to account for hugging Barack Obama when he arrived with some hurricane relief, if I remember it correctly, and he was defeated. Anyway, he's now returned as a Democrat and evidently has won a seat in the House this year. The polls in Georgia closed at 7 p.m. How's it going there? Well, we're going to ask now Bill Nigut of Georgia Public Broadcasting. Bill, what can you tell us about the day in Georgia?
Well, Robert, I think the headline out of Georgia right now is that everyone has said it is too close to call. And that's a pretty remarkable thing for a state that hasn't voted for a Democratic presidential candidate since 1992 when Bill Clinton won Georgia. So the suggestion that Georgia is turning purple and tonight has at least the potential to turn blue is a pretty remarkable development for a state that has been in Republican hands for a long, long time.
Can you get a sense, Bill, of who's voting differently or who's turning out in such different numbers to affect a change like that in Georgia?
The black turnout here is right up at about 30%, which is enough to put Hillary Clinton certainly in the running. But more significantly, 10% of the vote, according to exit polls here, is Hispanic and Asian voters. That's a big jump in terms of the number of people in those minorities here. And those populations are growing rapidly, particularly in the Atlanta suburbs. So that's having an impact on how things are going here.
So you're saying about 40% of the vote in Georgia this year is non-Anglo white.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. So, and that's the reason that people here have been predicting for quite a while that Georgia's demographics are going to turn this purple, if not blue, certainly if not this election, in the next couple of elections.
Well, so far, too close to call. But as you say, that in itself is news at 8:45 Eastern Time in Georgia on election night. Bill Nigut, thanks.
Okay, Robert.
Joining us now is Democratic Senator Debbie Stabenow of Michigan. She has been campaigning for Hillary Clinton. Senator, thanks for being with us.
My pleasure.
We saw Donald Trump in Michigan just recently. Is your state closer than you expected it was going to be?
Well, we'll see. We're hearing different kinds of exit polling. I think what is most significant is that people are still standing in line in Detroit, and there are long lines. And so
I think we're going to have probably a late night. Usually the last numbers that come in Michigan are from Detroit, and I expect Hillary will win that by a very, very large margin. So we'll have to wait and see, but I'm feeling confident that she's going to win Michigan.
As a senator from the upper Midwest, do you see Donald Trump's successes this year as a one-off, odd development that reflects his personality? Or is this a chronic problem that the Democratic Party has to deal with?
Well, I think a couple of things. Certainly, interesting personality, having a reality talk show host and so on, who people knew in a different kind of way. I think what is important that everyone should be paying attention to is that the recovery is not done. And certainly in Michigan, Ohio, Pennsylvania, across the country, you know, we've seen Wall Street come back. We've seen those at the top doing well, but an awful lot of folks who used to say they were in the middle class, don't even feel like they're in the middle class anymore.
And well, does that set an urgent agenda for Hillary Clinton if she's elected to do something about that?
I think it does. I do. And I think for the Republicans as well. I mean, when President Obama came in, the first thing had to be to fix the financial markets and stabilize the markets. And then, of course, he stepped in to help us save auto manufacturing jobs. But when we tried to do the next step, which would affect all Americans in terms of infrastructure jobs and investing those things to help the middle class. Unfortunately, Republican colleagues at that point said no, they felt they'd done enough. You know, everything was okay. And so I think it's going to take real bipartisan support to understand both, you know, everybody needs to understand the recovery is not done. We're on the way. Certainly, we've made major progress. President Obama has dug us out of a huge hole, but there's more to do. And certainly in Michigan, folks want us to be focused on the things that are going to make sure that in a global economy, this is not a race down to the lowest standard of living, but it's a race up.
Senator, Donald Trump's message, though, about bringing back manufacturing jobs in particular did get some traction in your state. Do you think that your party, the Democratic Party, took certain votes for granted, union votes, white working class votes?
No, I really don't. I mean, first of all, it was the Democrats that stood with auto manufacturing to make sure that a million auto manufacturing jobs are still in America. And the second piece we wanted to do, and I'll just give you an example, I have a legislation we've been trying to get passed. The Republicans have filibustered now for several years. It's called the Bring Jobs Home Act that would close loopholes right now that are incentivizing jobs to go overseas, businesses to leave. So, no, actually, we've been fighting for this. The Republicans have been in control of the House and Senate.
But do you believe then if they haven't been able to pass that currently with Barack Obama, how would Hillary Clinton do any better?
Well, I think the difference is what I'm hopeful of, I guess, is that Republicans will hear what their Republican nominee was saying. Now, even though I have to be honest, I don't believe he has any credibility on this when he makes all of his products around the world, but he certainly was saying things that I agree with in terms of the need to create American jobs and to close the loopholes that are causing our jobs to go overseas. So I'm hoping that maybe, you know, this shakes things up a bit and our Republican colleagues will decide that, hey, we need to work together on this, because it's not just the Democrats saying it, it's Republicans saying it and people across the country who expect us to work together to be able to, you know, stop the things that have been happening that are hurting the middle class.
Senator Debbie Stabenow of Michigan, thank you so much, Senator.
You're welcome.
Let's turn now to our colleagues in the studio, Ron Elving, Sue Davis, and Sam Sanders has been watching the exit polls all night, yes? Looking at those results. First, Ron, let's say where we are at this point. All of the big battleground states that we were going to wait on, Ohio, Florida, North Carolina, even Pennsylvania, too close to call at this point. North Carolina, did I say that? And then Virginia. Also is running very close, so we don't know what's happened there.
Georgia as well. It's Georgia. A state that normally would have been called at this hour. We're about an hour after when it was called last time. Virginia, actually, Donald Trump has a lead of about 5 points, and that is a huge surprise, I think, to a lot of people, because Virginia has been considered more or less part of Hillary Clinton's wall of states going into today's vote. And so we, of course, haven't a lot of information about where that vote is coming from. So it may or may not be a really serious problem for her, but that's certainly eye-catching. We saw a result go by a little earlier. That was a fractional vote in Texas. Texas is certainly a very red state, but Hillary Clinton was doing all right there. So we're also interested in North Carolina, of course, which is about a 2-point race for Hillary Clinton at this point as they're moving towards. Certainly it's well into the majority of the vote counted there. Florida remains too close to call, even though Donald Trump now seems to have a lead of about a point, a little less than 2 percentage points, with 91% of the vote counted there. He is ahead, but he is not dispositively ahead, and there are 9 percentage points still out to be counted.
Sue Davis, some news?
We have some updates on electoral vote counts. Donald Trump has won Mississippi, which keeps him in a narrow lead with 66 electoral votes. Hillary Clinton has won Rhode Island, and it's 4 electoral votes, giving her 48 electoral votes at this moment. Again, none of the states that have been called tonight are surprises. They have all so far fallen exactly how we expected them to.
Sam Sanders, you've been watching exit polling. What are the headlines? What's interesting out there?
You know, I've actually spent some time tonight talking to Sanders supporters, folks that supported Bernie before, and I've been texting with them and tweeting with them and asking them how they feel tonight. And for the most part, lots of these supporters say that they're totally behind Clinton, but some of them are still pretty sad.
That was questionable.
Exactly. You know, I did talk with Winnie Wong. She found a People for Bernie and helped draft Sanders to run. And she said seeing the results tonight kind of bummed her out because states like Kentucky and Indiana, she thinks that Sanders could have won those states.
NPR's Sam Sanders, you're listening to special coverage from NPR News. Stay tuned.
Support for NPR's elections coverage comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and from Viking River Cruises, sailing through the heart of cities in Europe, Russia, and Asia. Viking River Cruises, exploring the world in comfort. Learn more at vrc.com.
Joining us now is Senator Barbara Mikulski of Maryland. She's the longest-serving woman in the Senate. She'll be retiring soon, so her seat is in play tonight. But it being in Maryland, it's a seat that the Democrats feel pretty confident of. Senator Mikulski, how excited are you about the possibility that tonight the United States might elect its first female president?
Well, I'm very cautiously optimistic about Hillary winning. We feel a momentum certainly in Maryland. She's going to win Maryland big. And by the way, my successor, Chris Van Hollen, has been declared the victor in Maryland, which means we hold that Senate seat for the Democrats. We're very excited that Tammy Duckworth has been declared the winner, or the projected winner in Illinois.
She's defeated.
I'm looking for Hillary to win the White House and Democrats to get control of the Senate.
Well, what do you make?
What a retirement gift.
Well, what do you make of the, to call them tight as an understatement, the incredibly tight races as the count goes on in Florida, in North Carolina, in Ohio, and even in Virginia? It's a very close race.
Well, I think what we're looking for, first of all, is turnout. And Hillary had just a fantastic turnout operation. It was targeted. It had a lot of enthusiasm, and it had a lot of enthusiasm for the Bernie people, and we were very grateful for that, we Hillary people. I think the role that President and Mrs. Obama played, Elizabeth Warren, and Bernie himself was a big boost for Hillary, and I was heartened in Baltimore as I moved around to talk to the young millennials. They really came over for Hillary because they see the kind of world that they want to live in. They're the people who are going to be alive at the end of this century, and they don't want a world that's going to be shaped by Donald Trump. They want a world shaped by Hillary Clinton, where we are stronger when we are together.
I'm going to ask you to answer briefly, which may be unfair, but having served 5 terms in the U.S. Senate, were the past couple of years dramatically different from the other few decades you've been there? I mean, was the mood in the Senate that different and unproductive in the past few years?
Well, it had nothing to do with mood. It had to do with the exaggerated, heavy-handed, ham-handed use of the filibuster in a very inappropriate way. President Obama was first attacked for the legitimacy of being an American citizen.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Then they used the filibuster, so we could never exercise our full potential in terms of the Obama agenda. And you know what? The voters are mad as hell, and they don't want to take it anymore. And that's why, though Trump might wear his hat, it will be Hillary that'll win the crown.
Okay, Barbara Mikulski, a longtime Democratic senator from Maryland, who's retiring this year. Thanks for talking with us.
Okay.
You're listening to Special Coverage from NPR News. Stay with us.
Rachel Martin and Robert Siegel in Washington tonight. I'm Tom Cran in the Minnesota Public Radio Newsroom as we continue with our special coverage here on Minnesota Public Radio News for this election night 2016. Minnesota has 10 electoral votes to contribute to the biggest story in the world tonight, the election of a new U.S. president. Our polls close here in just over 1 minute. If you're in line by 8, you should be able to vote. We've got our eye on those numbers for you, and also turnout tonight and the congressional races all ahead. Stay with us as our coverage continues. This is Minnesota Public Radio News, 91.1 KNOW, Minneapolis, St. Paul. Listener-supported radio with more news anytime, including tonight. Election coverage, full coverage, and how at mprnews.org. Make us your second screen all evening long. The live blog, the real-time results as they come in. And since the polls close here in 30 seconds, we'll begin to get results from the Secretary of State's office. 650,000 people in Minnesota voted early. So we'll have our eye on those results and bring them to you with the national results throughout the night. Stay with us here on Minnesota Public Radio News, mprnews.org, and on Facebook as well. We've got a Facebook Live event up and running tonight. Upper 30s by morning. Tomorrow, another nice early November day. Sunny, the high around 60, 8 p.m., poll closing time in Minnesota.